You are listening to Friends of Europe's podcast. Don't miss our debates on global and European issues that span political, economic, social, and environmental challenges, and follow our website at friendsofeurope.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Giles Merritt. I'm the Secretary General of Friends of Europe. And I'm really proud to open this fifth forum. The title of today's conference is Looking Forward, Looking Back. And indeed, I started looking back to the origins of the Europe-China Forum. The origins were Chinese. They were the ideas of the mission of China to the European Union, with whom, ever since my colleague Shada Islam launched Friends of Europe's Asia program, a major feature of our activities, but ever since those times, the mission has given us enormous help and encouragement. And I really think we owe a great debt of gratitude. We're going to be hearing from Ambassador Yang Yanyi in a moment, but both she and her predecessors really have been powerhouses behind the development of our relationship. Looking back, I also thought how different things are today to what they were then. And 5 years ago, China, of course, was on everybody's lips. But it was still, there was more talk than walk. Certainly in Brussels, it's taken the European Union as a sort of collective. I don't just mean the Commission and the institutions. I mean the sort of whole Brussels, what they call the Brussels bubble. It's taken quite a long time to really adapt to the realities of China as a major global player and also as a major partner. But I think we're getting there. I think that Friends of Europe, under Shada's leadership, is really making a great deal of progress. But then I thought about looking forward, and it seemed to me that some of the remarks made by Premier Li here in Brussels yesterday really do point to the fact that there is a lot to be done, that for a long time, Europe's and America's investment in China was roughly the same as their investments in Ireland. So we have a lot to build on and a long way to go before the relationship is as close as both sides would wish it to be. And I think that does mean a lot of work, not just by commercial companies or diplomats or academics. I think it means a lot of work by civil society at large. And I think that today's conference, when I look at the first of the Europe-China forums, I think the big difference in today's is that to prepare this conference, Friends of Europe has had two very active and very influential Chinese partners. And I'd like to thank the China Institute for Reform and Development, the CIRD, and also the China Public Diplomacy Association for all the hard work they've put in to helping us put today together. I'd like briefly to mention our two media partners. I think the relationship with China Daily is very welcome, very important. They did me the honor of a few weeks ago what I thought was actually a rather flattering profile, almost embarrassingly so. So thank you very much. And also I see that in today's China Daily there's a very interesting article by Shada herself on, the title I think says it all, Get on Board the Silk Road Express Before It's Too Late. Not only China Daily, but our own policy journal, Europe's World, is also very, very involved, not just in China, EU affairs, but in Asia generally. And I like to think that Europe's World seeks out not just the flattering pieces, but the analyses that really matter. And the one that came to mind when thinking about today's conference is one in the, not the latest issue, but the spring issue of Europe's World, written by Shang Xiaotong of Wuhan University. Treading carefully in the minefield of EU-China investment rules. I plan to send a copy of this article to Prime Minister Li Keqiang to help inform his next remarks on investment relationships between China and Europe. I think with that, then nothing remains for me to do except to invite, first of all, Her Excellency Ambassador Yang Yanyi to address us. And after that, we've heard from the ambassador, return to her opposite number in Beijing, Ambassador Hans-Dietmar Schweizgut, who represents the European Union in China. Ambassador, thank you very much for coming to the floor.
Dear Giles Merritt, Secretary General of Friends of Europe, Your Excellency Ambassador Hans, distinguished participants, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. It is with great pleasure for me to join all of you at the 5th China-EU Forum. I would like to take this opportunity to express my high appreciation to Friends of Europe for its excellent organization and dedication it has continuously contributed to advancing China-EU comprehensive strategic partnership. Today's event is of special significance since it is held against the backdrop of the 40th anniversary of China-EU diplomatic relations and in the wake of the 17th China-EU summit. Coming fresh from the summit, I wish to share with you the main message transpired from it, especially priorities of China-EU cooperation. Before I do that, I wish to say that Premier Li Keqiang came to Brussels to attend the 17th China-EU summit at a time when the EU is in the midst of the Greek debt crisis. So the first message that my premier shared with the leaders and the general public of Europe is that he's here on behalf of the Chinese government to show our support for a united EU, a strong euro, and a prosperous Europe. It is in the interest of the EU, of Europe and of China and the rest of the world that Greece stays in the EU and the Eurozone and that an appropriate solution is worked out and the crisis be overcome. With regard to China-EU relations, our leaders express satisfaction over the development of China-EU relationship, which made significant strides in the political, economic, social, and cultural fields over the past 40 years, and contributed not only to China's development and European integration, but also to world peace, stability, and prosperity. With the China-EU relationship entering its 40th year, both sides reaffirmed their commitment to bring China-EU comprehensive strategic partnership to its full strategic potential by vigorously exploring new dimensions and new areas of dialogue and cooperation. In line with this, our leaders agreed to focus on the following areas for cooperation in the coming years. First, support and participate in each other's initiatives. China believes that its development agenda enjoys a certain degree of synergy with the EU's strategy, including the €315 billion European Fund for Strategic Investment, which aims to foster long-term growth and job creation. In view of this, we will work closely with the EU side to explore ways and means of co-financing and initiating projects which are of mutual interest and mutual benefit. Second, promote connectivity. We wish to align the One Belt, One Road initiative, short for the Silk Road Economic Belt and the 21st Century Maritime Silk Road, with EU's development agenda, including its plan to advance transportation corridors. Given that some Eastern and Central European countries are in need of advancing infrastructure building, and China is in the position to provide high-quality and good-price technology, products, and equipment, such an alignment and cooperation in production capacity will boost jobs and growth in Europe and create opportunities for China to invest in the EU. This will also facilitate boosting the world economy. Third, strengthen dialogue and cooperation in the digital area. We will enforce and reinforce cooperation in innovative projects relating to internet, e-commerce, advanced digital services, 5G, cybersecurity, big data, and smart cities and smart energy. Fourth, enhance dialogue and communication on legal affairs. Both China and the EU are of the view that to promote sound development of their cooperation and enabling environment for business, it is highly necessary to deepen understanding of each other's legal systems and to establish a consultation mechanism on justice and law enforcement cooperation. Fifth, expand people-to-people exchange. We are encouraged by the growing interactions between our peoples. Now some 16,000 passengers travel between China and European countries over 70 flights each day. We are appreciative of the extensive and rich activities to celebrate the 40th anniversary of China-EU diplomatic relations, which have brought our people even closer. To build a solid foundation for cooperation, China and the EU are committed to expanding and facilitating people-to-people exchanges. As a concrete step in this direction, the EU member states could establish some 15 visa application centers in authorized Chinese cities where there is no embassy or consulate. China and the EU will, in due course, sign an agreement on China-EU reciprocal visa waiver for holders of diplomatic passports. Apart from these newly emerging key areas of cooperation, being firmly committed to boosting two-way investment and improving market access on a reciprocal basis, we will intensify efforts aiming at the expeditious conclusion of an ambitious and comprehensive China-EU investment agreement. We also hope that China and the EU will look into a deep and comprehensive China-EU FTA. Though this might be a longer-term perspective, it is our belief that such an arrangement will be a win-win deal for both China and the EU. We will also deepen financial cooperation. China and the EU are satisfied with the progress made in their economic and financial dialogue and the working group between the presidents of the People's Bank of China and the European Central Bank. And they agreed to expand exchanges on macroeconomic policy and maintain close communication on international economic and financial issues and expand practical cooperation in economic and financial fields. We will also continue to reinforce cooperation on science, technology and innovation, human resources development, sustainable growth and urbanization, exploitation of research findings and commercialization of R&D results and technology, especially high-tech transfer, technology transfer, so as to harness our competitive advantages. As key global players sharing responsibility for promoting global peace and stability, China and the EU stressed that the commemoration of the 70th anniversary of the victory of the World Anti-Fascist War is to draw lessons from history and usher in a better future. China and the EU are committed to keeping up their high-level exchanges and strategic dialogue to build up trust and confidence and work together to uphold the purposes and principles of the UN Charter, promote multilateralism to ensure effective, coordinated, and coherent responses to global challenges and make the international order and system more just and equitable, and also to build a new type of international relations based on win-win cooperation. The leaders emphasized that China and the EU should work constructively together and with other countries to adopt a protocol, another legal instrument, or an agreement or agreed outcome with legal force under the convention applicable to all parties at the United Nations Climate Conference in Paris later this year. They are committed to reaching an ambitious 2015 agreement that reflects the principle of common but differentiated responsibilities and respective capabilities in light of different national circumstances. The leaders reiterated their readiness to work together for a fair, inclusive and sustainable post-2015 development agenda, intensify coordination on global economic governance and communication on macro financial policy under the G20 framework, and strengthen communication and coordination on issues concerning counterterrorism in all forms, promoting non-proliferation, securing safety on navigation in Somalia and the Gulf of Aden, and promoting peace and security in Africa. In short, the summit is in-depth, substantive, forward-looking, action-oriented, constructive, and successful. It not only took stock of past achievements, but most importantly, it charted the course for the future. Driven by the intertwined and interacting factors of China's further reform and opening up and transformation, the European integration process and globalization, and most importantly, the strategic perception and vision that China and the EU are mutually reinforcing global partners and not mutually excluding competitors. There's good and solid cause for optimism of a brighter future for China-EU relationship. In the words of Confucius, at 40, I had no more doubts. With China-EU relationship entering its 40th year, as the two great forces for peace, two huge markets, and two great civilizations, China and the EU will do more and will do much better to realize their shared aspiration for world peace, stability, development, and prosperity in the next four decades and beyond. In conclusion, we will look forward to the insightful deliberation and bold recommendations on China-EU relations at this forum. And there's no doubt, with your eager participation and valuable contribution, the fifth China-EU Forum will be crowned with success. Thank you very much.
Now I have great pleasure in welcoming Ambassador Schweizgut to the podium.
Thank you, Giles, Ambassador Young, ladies and gentlemen. This was a very comprehensive overview, I think, what Ambassador Young gave of yesterday's successful summit, as she rightly underlined. I'm not going to duplicate what she said, because I think her account was reflecting really the outcome of what we yesterday achieved. So if I may, let me just give a few personal reflections, complementing this picture. First of all, let me congratulate, of course, the EU-China Forum for this fifth edition, which I think shows that this has become a tradition with a very important place in the overall EU-China context. And I unfortunately have to fly back to Beijing, otherwise I would be very much looking forward to staying with you here today. The theme of your forum today is looking forward, looking back. And of course, as Ambassador Young was saying a moment ago, we were very much aware that the summit was taking place in the context of 40 years of diplomatic relations, which we celebrate this year with numerous activities. But I was also struck by the fact that, and I think that's a good sign of our relationship, that there was much less of looking back than of looking forward. And I think this was achieved because already in the run-up of the summit, I think we both agreed that we do not need a new comprehensive document on which to base our relationship on. We already have that. We have an agenda for strategic cooperation 2020, which was adopted at the summit in November 2013 in Beijing. And in many ways, this still remains, if I may say so, the Bible of our relationship, covering basically all areas of cooperation, which is also carried out by, I think, more than 60 sectoral dialogues, underpinning the three major political meetings which we have: the strategic dialogue, the summit, of course, the high-level economic and trade dialogue, and then, of course, the high-level people-to-people exchange. And I think it's also very fitting, and I think a very good sign, that this year, the year of our 40th anniversary, is also the year, I think, where the sequence of all these meetings is such that they interact and really allow us to move forward. And therefore, when we look at yesterday's summit, it's not just an event in isolation. I think many of the things which were discussed and, I should say, agreed on yesterday were also meant to immediately and directly feed into the next phase. The summit is always a date when I think Ambassador Young and I look at each other at the end. We feel a bit exhausted and happy that it's successfully done. But in reality, it's also the start of a more intense working relationship. And I think many of the things which were agreed yesterday will immediately feed into the preparation of the high-level economic and trade dialogue, which will take place at the end of September in Beijing. It will be co-chaired by Vice Premier Ma Kai on the Chinese side and Vice President Katainen on the side of the European Union. He will travel to Beijing with, I think, something like 6 to 7 commissioners accompanying him, which shows a bit that this is no longer just a trade dialogue. We are much beyond that phase. And therefore, I think if you look at the impulses which came out of yesterday's summit, obviously there was quite a long and detailed discussion on the international foreign policy and security environment, the way how we cooperate. I will not go into any detail of this. I think Ambassador Young laid this out very clearly. There are some areas, I think, where we made concrete progress in terms of setting a process on the way, which will guide our cooperation in the month to come. Obviously, there are some very welcome signs in terms of encouraging greater interchange on a people-to-people level. And I think the agreement we had on visa issues and travel facilitation certainly is a very good one. And also the legal dialogue on which we agreed yesterday, I think, will open up a very important new avenue of cooperating in that field. But if I may say so, the focus, I think, of the discussion very much was on investment, on connectivity, on synergies and how we can drive this process forward. Now, I think one thing which came out in all the discussions and which I thought is important, even though it seems to be very obvious. I remember one instance when Prime Minister Li Keqiang talked about our shared interests. And that is really, I think, a very strong basis for this cooperation, because only if we do have shared interest, can we really strive to work on a cooperation leading to what has become, in its English translation, a Chinese neologism, which is very much accepted everywhere, win-win. Now, it's also a bit of a coincidence, but I think a very telling one, that at the moment when leaders met for the summit, colleagues in the area of finance were in Beijing to sign the Articles of Agreement of the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. And of course, there are linkages. 14 member states of the European Union have become founding members. They were there to sign a very important new initiative, and we are very much looking forward to becoming this, in the eyes of some of the founders, a green and lean bank living up to the higher standards of international governance. The Silk Road initiatives, the One Belt, One Road, is something which is much talked about, and in the last month, obviously also were increasingly filled with substance and also with concrete signs where we could more closely cooperate and develop synergies. Now, this is what the connectivity platform will be about. And this is something which I feel is very important, also because it will transcend simply a transport corridor. I think it will be a comprehensive platform to talk about connectivity in the wider sense, including other issues than transport, energy, ITC, but also the software related, the legal conditions, the competitive environment, issues of transparency. So this is, I think, one of the areas where we need to invest a lot of work to make sure that our shared interests also lead to shared and common results. A lot of time was spent on investment issues, on European Fund for Strategic Investment, the so-called Juncker Fund, with very concrete proposals from the Chinese side on how we could cooperate and how China could come in into concrete project financing. This is something which we will discuss in more detail, and where the high-level economic and trade dialogue is supposed to come up with very concrete results. I think that is all very important, because it shows that we are no longer simply talking about new concepts and visions, but we are also already in the area of implementation. Let me also say that one of the things Ambassador Yang mentioned last is something to which we attach, of course, highest importance. She referred to the statement, the common statement we had on climate change in view of the Paris conference taking place at the end of this year. Now, I think this is not only a very important symbol that China and the European Union are joining hands, assuring each other, but also the world, that they will work together towards a successful outcome of the Paris summit. I think it's also a sign of concrete cooperation and of a meeting of minds on many of issues related to that, as is the discussion which we had on development cooperation and the post-2015 millennium cooperation. So all in all, I think a lot, as I said, not in terms only as outcome, but also as a working agenda and a roadmap ahead of us. Let me also briefly refer to one of the areas which was underlined as being key to our future cooperation, in the one area which is still, in the views of many, the pillar, or the main pillar of our economy, of our relationship, namely trade and investment. We are reconfirming our commitment to achieving a successful outcome of the negotiations on an ambitious and comprehensive investment agreement. This could really be a game changer. The ambassador referred also to the Chinese view that this should eventually be complemented by a deep and comprehensive FTA, which we see as a longer-term perspective, because we do believe that the important thing is to make real and substantial progress as quickly as we can on the bilateral investment agreement, which would focus both on investment protection and also on market access. This is maybe a theme which also, of course, was a recurrent theme during yesterday's discussion, that we do need also to make sure that our increasing cooperation in all areas, trade, investment, but also science, technology, innovation, ICT cooperation, is also providing for a level playing field and providing for more reciprocity. This applies to funding, to standardization issues, I think all issues of governance, which I'm sure will come up in more detail in your later discussions, and on which I will not need to focus on. We also, of course, want to develop our common digital agenda. We do need, as was also stressed yesterday, continue and deepen our exchange on the future of the Internet. President Juncker at some stage was saying we want a secure, but not a controlled, but rather an open Internet. So all of those issues will also be part of the agenda and of the roadmap of our work, which we have cut out. But as I said, it was a very much forward-looking summit. It was, as you know, the first summit between the new leadership of the European Union with Prime Minister Li Keqiang. I think it established not only a very solid, firm working relationship, but I think it also struck me as being a meeting of people who trust each other, who immediately found common language and common aspirations. And that augurs well, I think, for the future of EU-China relationship. So with that, I would like to thank you once again for allowing me to share my thoughts with you. I would like to thank my colleague Ambassador Young for her contribution to the summit, the preparation, also for her comprehensive overview of what happened, and I wish all of you a very successful day of considerations, of discussions, which I'm sure will make an important contribution to driving the EU-China agenda further forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hans Dietmar, Ambassador. Thank you to both of our ambassadors for getting today's conference off to a really good start. And before I hand over to Shada, who is the moderator throughout the day, just a thought. I think we all know that when a summit conference such as yesterday's is so clearly a success, it owes a great deal to the work put into it by the respective diplomatic missions and their staffs who've prepared the ground so thoroughly. So my congratulations to both heads of mission. Shada, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much indeed, Charles. Really delighted to be holding this conference, this forum, right after the summit yesterday. And following it from the sidelines, I had to say I was quite impressed, and I really think that China and Europe are on a new path. It's something that we at Friends of Europe have been pushing for a very long time. It's all very well to talk about strategic relationship, but you have to give it some beef. And I think yesterday it is on the path to practical, pragmatic cooperation on many areas. So we're delighted that the leaders, the two governments, are following our advice. Today we'll be exploring some of the ideas that were dealt with yesterday, and I'm really delighted that we'll kick off today's exciting agenda with a discussion on digital cooperation, the digital agenda that both sides are developing with such energy and enthusiasm, and we're going to see what synergies are possible there. Later on, we're going to talk about smart cities, another area of intense China-Europe cooperation. We have a conversation on smart cities today and tomorrow. And our final session is all about connectivity platform, the synergies, the cooperation possible between the One Belt, One Road initiative that China has put on the global agenda, and the EU's Strategic Fund for Investment, which also requires funding, requires inspiration and financing as well. So it's going to be an exciting day. We've got great panelists throughout, people who've come with great experience, knowledge, and I have to say wisdom about the different issues that are under discussion. So I'm really delighted to have all of you on board, of course, participants like yourselves. Let me, without further ado, actually start introducing the panelists on this first session. To my right, my dear colleague and friend, Professor Shi Fulin. He is president of the China Institute for Reform and Development, CRD, and I have to say, one of China's most influential academics and economists. So we're really delighted to be partnering with you, Professor Shi, and thank you for coming from Beijing for this conference. I also have the pleasure of introducing Linda Corrigedo-Stenberg. She's also very, very influential in the area of digital, principal advisor at the European Commission, Director General for Communication Networks, Content and Technology, Connectivity, DigiConnect. To my left, also someone who's flown in from China for this forum, Zhong Ming-sung. He's senior fellow at the McKinsey Global Institute, and he leads their research team in China. He's written the seminal MGI report on digital China, and I really wanted him here to come and explain to us the challenges that China faces and also the future agenda that China has set out. To the extreme left at the moment is Luigi Gambardella, as president of China EU. I think many of you here know Luigi. We're really happy to be cooperating with you on this session as well, Luigi, so welcome to this. Larry Stone, also a familiar face in Brussels from BT. BT, of course, is very active in China, and we'll hear about what you think about possible collaboration between China and Europe in this. And last but not least, a wonderful Wyman Gao, who is president of the Federation of Chinese Professional Associates in Europe. And he has quite a lot to tell us about his life in Europe, and also when he goes back to China, how he sees digital revolution taking place in China. So without further ado, just to set the rules of the game, I think everyone here knows that we encourage interactive, dynamic, and lively discussions. I'm going to first put a question to Professor Schifferlin about the wider economic transformation taking place in China at the moment. The new normal we've all heard about, switch from manufacturing to services, the 13th five-year plan that is under preparation, and how all of this is changing China today and tomorrow. So, Professor, I am going to kick off with a question to you about this economic transformation. What do you see as the key priorities for China in the next 5-10 years? The professor will speak in Chinese, so I would encourage all of you and myself to take headsets.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah, for your questions. So regarding the future 5 to 10 years, or next 2 years till 2016, or till next year, let's set a future plan for next 6 years. So what's our development plan? I think after the Industrial Revolution in China, most of the time the reform has to do with the actual practical needs of China. So I'd like to talk about service sector. Why are service sector of service industry important in the future? Because I think in the future, next 6 years, service industry will increase by and growth. We can see growth by 10% by year. So we can see that 10% increase in the next 6 years. Secondly, for the scale of the development of service industry, I think from 27 trillion last year, we can see it increased to 50 trillion in 2020. And in 2020, we can predict that service sector accounts to 48% of the total GDP. Last year, we can see increase to 55% in GDP. And all those has to do innovation, I think, accounts for 50%. Currently, I think we can see it increase to 35 to 40. Therefore, I can say that in 2020, we can see economy being led by service industry. So for this kind of trend, what does it mean to China? I will sum up with one sentence, that for this kind of economic structure that led by service industry will become a norm in China in the future. Why? Because it actually supports the sustainable development in China. As we can see in the last 10 years, the development trend, every time where service sector has increased the growth by 1%, it actually contributes to 0.43 total GDP. So in the next 10 years, we can see service sector will increase by 10%. That means we can convert it to 4% growth in GDP. That means in the next 6 years, if GDP growth can maintain 6 to 7%, that's totally doable and possible with the support of the service industry. And also, developing service industry, what can it do to employment rate? In the last 2 years, as we can see, the whole structure of economy has changed in the last 2 years. So every time if we see service sector grows by 1%, that means we create 1 million jobs. If we can see it increase by 10%, that means we can see 10 million employment possible. Especially under the creation and enhancement of internet, and all the startup thing is prosperous. So under this initiative, we can see more jobs being created and more consumptions being encouraged. So till 2020, if we judge from statistics from last year, 2014. So We can see the contribution for 51% from the service sector. We can see it increase to 60%. It actually came from consumption. So that can be converted to 30 trillion to at least 55 trillion. And that we can predict an economy being led by service industry. And it can actually prioritize the economy in China. So I can predict that for the total employment, at least 50% will be working in the service sector. And more importantly, it will help enhance the green growth in China. If in 2020 we can have at least 50% of the service sector, that means we can lower the consumption of energy by 40%. We can lower the carbon emission by 18%. And thirdly, I'll be very brief to your question earlier. So in the future, if we can see an economy led by service industry in China, what does that mean? I think there are three major points I'd like to point out. How can that enhance China-Europe cooperation? First, of course, we can see more of the service trade between China and Europe. And the statistics in 2013, it accounts for 12% of the total foreign trade. I predict by 2020, China-EU service trade will reach 20 to 25%, at least. If that's the case, the service trade total volume in 2020 will reach 200 to 220 billion euros. And I think we're talking about the Internet Plus. And all the industries has to do with the Internet Plus. They will become the major sector we focus on, especially regarding innovation to enhance China-EU trade in the future. We're always talking about the annual growth, and we can predict, we can see 20 to 25%. And yes, we do suffer some pressure this year in terms of economic growth. However, the consumer products increased by 37% from January to May this year. And information technology growth, I think it will reach at least 3.2 trillion. So I think that all these numbers and figures has been contributed through the Internet Plus plan. And I think it should be our priority when we work together in the future. And also, we have to enhance the cooperation of capacity, especially in terms of processing and manufacturing. If we can enhance the equipment processing and enhance the capacity, that can increase the investment volume from China to EU. I'd like to sum up here that I think the most important priority is taking action. So I'd like to raise three points. How can we enhance taking actions? First is based on the Juncker plan and based on the One Belt, One plan. Based on all these principles and rules, we can come up with an action plan or even have an ad hoc to have a working group to work on it. I think we've been talking too much. Now should be done to actions. Second, I would like to suggest that for European and Chinese governments, for governments on the both sides, please support free trade agreement. And I think it can become too effective in the near future. Under the new framework, I think we can see more and more of the regional economic cooperation. So, based on this progress of free trade agreement negotiation, we can actually start free trade area as soon as possible. I think the sooner we start, the sooner we can achieve them. A lot of traditional concepts, I think we should abandon them. Now is the time to cooperate together and work on free trade agreement and foresee free trade areas come to effective in the near future. Last but not least, with the support of both governments, we have to come up with a think tank cooperation. No matter to come up with action plan or the research about free trade agreements and free trade areas, I think down to the ability of how much think tanks can contribute to all those cooperation. So I like to call upon, again, quick action and more efficient team. In the last years, I've been visiting Brussels for six times, and this month is my second visit to Brussels. I pay this frequent visit. I hope to see us to cooperate soon. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Scher, for that very, I have to say, lucid and brilliant insight into where China's service sector economy is headed and the importance of Internet Plus and digital within this concept. And I have to say, we think tanks in Brussels, in Europe, when we look at Chinese think tanks and how influential they are, I think that is a lesson for us to learn. And cooperation is the name of the game for sure. So thank you very much indeed for that. We'll have questions for Professor later on. I'm going to turn now to Jongmin Seung from the MGI and ask you to comment a little bit about on what Professor Scher has said, but also to give us some of the main points that you've made in your Digital Transformation of China report, where you do set out certain challenges, including regulatory challenges that have to be tackled before you reach that new era, if you like.
Yeah, so Professor Qin mentioned that so China is entering the new normal, and therefore, you know, China needs a new growth engine, and in that sense, the internet will play a very critical role. So from more quantity-driven, input-driven economy to quality-driven and service and productivity-driven economy, in that sense, internet will play a substantial role. And then in our report, we describe, you know, two waves of, you know, digital transformation that is happening in China. First wave has been happening over the past, you know, 10 years, and that is largely driven by consumer. And by almost any measure, China is the largest, you know, digital consumer country as of now. And then if you look at the next, you know, 10 years, you know, it's going to be more driven by enterprise. So that's going to be second wave of digital transformation that we expect in China. And we quantify the impact, and then we expect, you know, potentially, you know, up to, you know, 22% of the total growth can come from this second wave of digital revolution. And in terms of challenge, there are, you know, multiple fronts, right? So the first challenge, as you mentioned, is regulatory, because usually there's tension between regulation and innovation. And for example, in financial sector, Chinese financial market is not fully liberalized. And then, you know, therefore, you know, there are some, you know, underserved segments, right? And then with internet, you know, there are new business models like P2P lending or micro lending. And that is serving this underserved, you know, segments, which is good for the economy. But at the same time, you know, there could be, you know, side effect, which is fraud, right, in the other P2P lending. So from, you know, regulatory standpoint of view, you know, how to manage this balance between the innovation and the protecting the normal people, the citizens. So that's going to be the first challenge. Second challenge will be, you know, how to reward the long-term innovators in China, because there is a huge opportunity. You know, in some sense, you know, there's almost over competition, right? So at some point, you know, e-commerce was very big, and then there were 5,000, you know, group buying internet companies in China, right? So, you know, it's just sometimes, you know, it's over competition. It may be good for consumers, right? But then in the long term, if you don't properly reward the other innovators, you know, it may not be very healthy for the economy. So that'll be the second challenge. Third challenge is continued, you know, market-driven reform, especially for traditional and SOE-dominated sector, because, you know, that's where a lot of, you know, so-called enterprise-driven, you know, revolution needs to happen. But then, you know, do they have proper incentive scheme to drive, you know, longer-term innovation? So that's what, you know, the China needs to overcome as the third challenge.
Right. And when you look at government policy at the moment, what is being done, are you encouraged that the right steps are being taken to achieve the different ambitions that have been laid out, among others, by Professor Scher?
Yeah, so good news is that, you know, Chinese government is fully, you know, acknowledging and recognizing those, you know, challenges, right? And then they are trying to experiment, you know, new policies. For example, you know, financial sector, you know, the traditional banks are very big, and sometimes they are slow to change, and they give license to a lot of internet companies, right, to drive, you know, internet banking and to serve the underserved, for example, small medium enterprise segment, right? So that change has been happening, right? So therefore, you know, we, you know, continue to need to, you know, watch out the monitor the trend, you know, how this will be, you know, continue to evolve in China.
So the regulatory framework is on the right track.
It's improving, but then, you know, the question is how to define the right track, because, you know, innovation by definition is messy. It's not definable. So therefore, you know, we cannot say it's on the right track, but, you know, government is making an effort.
Right. Okay. We'll come back to some of those issues. Linda, I'd like to turn to you now. So you heard the ambassadors and you've read the summit statements, etc. A lot of focus on digital synergies and digital agendas being in common, etc. Do you, and I think there's going to be a special sort of conversation, if you like, on digital as well between China and Europe. What do you see as the practical steps, and how important do you think this is in this future cooperation between China and Europe?
Thank you very much, Shala. And first of all, thank you for inviting me to this auspicious event marking 40 years of increasing cooperation between the EU and China. And also, I can't continue without thanking the Chinese Prime Minister for his expression of solidarity to the European Union for the dramatic times we're going through right now, as relayed by Ambassador Yang. So thank you very much for that. Yes, we like to say that ICT is everywhere, actually. So ICT has been looked at as a sector in the past, but now, as far as industry is concerned, you really have it everywhere. So this is an important area of cooperation. And the destination of the new Silk Road is, of course, Europe, so it will be very important for us, that's for sure. And we're hoping for a mutual beneficial cooperation on that. Now, you may know that the EU is China's largest trading partner since 2004, and China is EU's second largest also. So we really have mutual interests in developing the cooperation, not only in the ICT area, but in other areas as well. So the potential is truly huge. And the connectivity platform that you will come back to this afternoon is a new initiative, and that will certainly be important for the future because, of course, the core of it is infrastructure and transport, but also other areas will be concerned, not least the ICT. So, therefore, we think it will be very important. We know that China is very interested in cooperating with us on 5G development. And we are discussing a cooperation right now. However, here I have to say that on the EU side, we will be insisting on access, because we need to have access to standardization bodies, just like Chinese companies have in Europe. We need fair conditions for public procurement, and we do also, of course, want access to research and development and innovation programs, the way that Chinese companies have enjoyed for some time with the previous framework programs and now with Horizon 2020. So I think that our ambassador in Beijing already mentioned this, but market access and access and mutual benefits will be important as we go forward, because the only way for any relationship, human or business or other relationships, to prevail over the longer term is if there is something in it for both sides. So yes, thank you.
In terms of practical work on developing common standards, for instance, you talked about 5G. Has the work actually started, Linda, in these areas?
Well, on the European side, it has started. Yes. But as I think mentioned, we do not, for the moment, have access to the Chinese body that has been set up for standards on this side. So we're hoping that the agreement last year between the then Commissioner for Trade in the Commission and the Chinese Minister of Trade, called the Telecoms Agreement, that established a more level playing field, will be a model for the future cooperation, because in this we actually have a how to do it recipe, let's say. So this is what we're looking for, actually.
Thank you very much. Larry, if I may ask you about BT in China and your own views also about the digital single market here in Europe and how you think there could be cooperation or synergies with what China is doing in the digital sector as well.
Well, thanks very much, Sharda, and it's nice to be here. And well, we're small, but I think perfectly formed in China. We do three sorts of things. One is we sell services, data services, security services, and other applications to major multinationals operating in China. And we serve major Chinese multinationals as they go global, companies like Haier, companies like Huawei, and others. Of course, all that's in partnership with companies like Huawei, China Telecom, and China Unicom. It's a growing market, and our USP really is the depth and spread of our global network. The second thing we do is we buy a lot of equipment from China, whether it's Huawei or ZTE, and we also buy a lot from European manufacturers, and that's a very, very, very innovative approach in China. And the third thing we do is we have a set of global procurement service and R&D centres in Dalian, in Beijing, in Shanghai, in Shenzhen, and our regional headquarters are in Hong Kong. So we have a growing spread. Maybe, Charlotte, if I just pick on a few issues. I've tried to sort of shoehorn these into five things beginning with S. So if you find it a bit sort of hard work, I apologize for that. I think the first thing where we may be able to collaborate is in the area of spread. And what I mean by that is that, China's done a remarkable job in terms of the spread of mobile and fixed broadband across the country. I think there are about 750 or 780 million connections at the moment, more than the population of the European Union. The European Union, of course, has great penetration. The issue for China, really, of course, is then greater penetration and the rural spread, particularly to the west of China, and perhaps collaboration on rural technologies, future technologies is probably a good thing. And the second area for me really is skills and skills exchange and collaboration, as my colleague mentioned, on the standards side, but also between universities in areas like data analytics, where you know, companies like Alibaba and Tencent are world leading, and Europe perhaps needs to do more. The third area has already been mentioned is around standards, for example, in 5G, Internet of Things. And the digital single market approach by the European Commission and the Internet Plus approach set out by the Chinese Premier on the 5th of March at the States Council have a lot of very similar themes around Internet of Things, around e-commerce, around standards, all of which I think are show a good basis for moving forward. My fourth S is smart cities, and I won't say too much because that's a debate later on today. But areas like, it's quite obvious, China has sort of a massive, I think it's grown in the last 30 years, the manufacturing base in China has grown about 18-fold. The annual value add is about $2.2 trillion. Dollars in China. So it's a massive base for moving into next generation manufacturing, just as the Germans are doing. So the debate between Industry 4.0 and the Internet of Things, I think, is a great area of market opening. You look at areas like smart logistics, traffic management, energy management, pollution control, e-health, lots of areas like that. The fifth area is perhaps a bit more, not controversial, but perhaps controversial, is around the area of security and security collaboration, as well as concerns about security. There have been some debate, as I think my colleague mentioned, about data localization versus trans-border data flows, for example, in the financial services sector. There's been debate about that in China recently. At the same time, given the sort of the threats the world faces, some sort of a sense of greater collaboration at the international level in the cybersecurity area might be helpful. And commercial companies like my own want to offer a range of solutions in that area. So I think there's a range of things there. And perhaps finally, services, as mentioned by the professor in particular. I mean, services will generate growth. We're keen to expand, working with partners, the services we offer in China. I think the last year or two, there's been a potential market opening when the State Council talked about you may be able to do more in or from free trade zones. That's good. On the other hand, we're still struggling a little bit with the complexity around process and interpretation, which can vary according to who you speak to. So that's an area we need to sort of work on. And, I mean, there's enough difficulty on policy coherence in Europe, so maybe we could have an exchange on better policy coherence, but we'd certainly like to see more on that between the two trading blocks. Perhaps finally, just on services, I think we're obviously very supportive of a comprehensive investment agreement. I think we share the view of the British government that moving quickly to a free trade agreement would be potentially a very good thing. China has huge financial reserves growing to, I think, about $2 trillion a year. A lot of the FDI goes into the UK. I hope the UK stays in the EU, so that growth of FDI into the UK can continue. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry. So the companies are on the ball. They're doing what's needed to be done to take the policy decisions forward. Must be a hard task to keep track of all those different regulatory policies that keep coming out from there and here.
Yeah, it's sad to say it's a lifetime work.
That's jobs, Larry. Good. Luigi, I'm going to turn to you now. And if I may say, your life ambition now seems to be to promote closer digital innovation cooperation between China and Europe. And Linda's talked about 5G, the Internet of Things, I mean, cloud. I have to say, all of these concepts seem extremely exciting. And I was wondering what your experience is when you're in the sector to see practically if these concepts are being translated into reality.
Thank you very much, Shada. Thank you for this opportunity. And I would like, before I start, to thank also the Ambassador Yang, for even if she's not here, for her energy, if I may say also for her smiles. She's always smiling. And also, if I say also for the whole mission of China, which is a great mission, fantastic team of people, very motivated and very active. And I want to say this because I think that they deserve, and I would ask you to make an applause to the whole mission to China here in Europe, because they are great. Maybe I mean, ask really a big applause for them. But let me. I would be. You have asked to be controversial. I will be very controversial. So maybe I will slightly disagree also with something Linda said. But I want to say a few things. First, let's see the results of the summit and the panel we are on digital. We see very positive this result. Why? China, first, will invest in the Juncker plan. Second, China will create a fund. Now the details will have to be discussed, an ad hoc fund. Third, China will give a special focus to digital. Digital is becoming a priority in the relationship between Europe and China, and this is very important. And we are very happy for this result, and if I may say, we are very proud of this result. Because China-EU, we proposed this, and Larry, you were with us in February when we had a meeting with three vice presidents, and this was in our agenda, and we did. Together, working together with the European institution, working together with the Chinese government, and I think this is a very good initial result. We choose, as China-EU, to have a positive agenda. We understand that there are problems. There are problems. But let's look at the opportunity that we are in front of us. Let's focus on the opportunity, not only at the problem. And what I like, and I see in this relationship, that China has a very positive agenda, has a very positive energy. Let me say what is different from us. China has ambition. China has vision. Sometimes we European, we don't have the same vision and we don't have the same ambition. we should believe more in the future, and we should dream more as Europeans. We need to dream more, and I always repeat this because dreaming is very important for me. And maybe we should also wake up. I agree what saying Xi Fulin, we need action. We need action, not only words. And if I may say, I think, from my point of view, the results that we have had also in the summit and in the improving of this relation between Europe and China has been mainly because, and also because of the Chinese side, which has been very proactive, has played a very important role. And I like to see also from our side, I'm speaking also from the industry side, a much more proactive role. Now, let's speak about follow-up, because the day after is more important. Sometimes the summit finish and everything. No, we have to start to work from today and continue to work in a much more continuous way. And as I said, this is a responsibility of the industry. 5G, I think that, yes, for China is important, but it's very important for Europe, 5G. Because what happens if we don't agree with China on 5G? They will do China has the capacity to do 5G. I think it's very important. It would be a failure if Europe would not sign an agreement on 5G. I'm sure. I think this will be done. There are problems, but at the same time, we have to look ahead and we have to look at the opportunity and that we have to build with China. And as I said, I think that an agreement on 5G is very important also for Europe. And maybe for Europe is even more important than for China. Now, focus on results. What we are doing? Few things. First, on the Juncker plan, we are working on scouting projects, regions, cities, but also industry. They can present projects. As you know, Chinese banks, Chinese institutions are interested to finance these projects. So here we have a huge opportunity. We are considering to create a task force on Chinese and European industry in order to support the idea to present project with Juncker plan. And I think we should do more also with the Chinese project. I was asking about numbers. We know that Juncker plan is 315 billion euro, right? Just to give you a figure, even our estimates, the One Belt, One Road, there are estimates that are saying that we are speaking about 21 trillion. So 70 times bigger than the Juncker plan. This is the dimension of the ambition of China. And here, for the European industry, there are a lot of opportunity to cooperate together with the Chinese industry. Let's think only for the smart city project. The Chinese government is invested 200 billion euro. And I see that the European industry, with the support of the European institution, we can do more and we can sure have much more European company operating also in China. Three things I finish very short. An announcement next week, we'll have a very important meeting. I think it's a historic meeting for us, at least for internet and telecom. We have the visit of Minister Liu Wei, which is the internet top regulator of China. He will be accompanied for the first time by a big delegation of the top Chinese internet and telecom player. We'll have Alibaba, we'll have Tencent, we'll have Baidu, we'll have China Mobile, China Telecom, China Unicom. And this will be a very important occasion. Why we are doing this? Because we see that there are potentiality in boost further the cooperation on internet and to start a much higher level internet dialogue between Europe and China. And the last thing is this, then we will also discuss, and we hope this can go through, but this is the idea that I will say here before next week, we will propose to create EU-China Internet Research Center, to create an ad hoc, very important initiative between Europe and China, very ambitious initiative, in order to work together more regularly on important issues as internet and all this important field. Last but not least, our focus will be on startup. Next week we'll have many Chinese and European startup, I think here we should be more ambitious, and I think that we can do, also with the support of the European institution, a very important cooperation with young entrepreneurs from China and from Europe.
Thank you very much, Luigi. I think there will be some follow-up questions about the practical aspects of this this cooperation that you say is essential and that we all agree is the way forward. So thank you very much for that. Turn now to Women Gao, and I'll start with the reference that Luigi made to startups, and that Jiumin Singh talked about the netizens in China, how important digital life has become for young Chinese and for the economy of China. So just give us a little bit of your personal experience about how this is transforming China today.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. I'm a scientist, so cannot give, it's not an expert of China-EU relation, cannot give a lot of figures and so on. I represent actually today as a Federation of Chinese Professionals in Europe. This is not a well-known organization, it's a non-government, non-profit. It's simply a network of Chinese professionals in Europe. It consists of 50 associations in 12 European countries. Each of the associations in a different domain and consists of a couple of hundred, even 1,000 Chinese or Chinese-related professionals. We have managers, engineers, lawyers, and professors, doctors, artists even, so in really all kinds of professionals. Definitely, we have our angle, our observation, because most of them are highly educated, living in Europe for many years. I live here for 20 years. It's got a lot of involvement, and I also travel to China from time to time. I do come back to the question. I do really feel that China in the past 20 years has gone a tremendous change, especially in thanks to the internet technology. Don't want to give more technical issue. I can give example that I visit China and Wuxi company after the company before. I left the meeting room before reaching to the elevator, and the secretary already said, and the taxi I ordered already, and it's waiting for you in 2 minutes downstairs, you will have that. And she also order the dinner online and with her manager, and during the dinner she got a confirmation of her beauty shop appointment, and he also got a confirmation of her gift to her mother at the birthday gift. Everything that she did is just a click on her mobile. As a Chinese, I sometimes could not follow this way. It's not very used to hear. I think also some Europeans have the same feeling. We all know that the past 20 years or 10 years, the Chinese is pretty innovative in the internet sector. As a technologist, I know that the second wave of ICT technology will come. That is currently, I think, internet connect people, connect information. You know, you go to there to buy something, you find the information. And the next wave will, the internet will connect things, everything actually, either in your home, your body, your car, your office. It will connect a lot of things. 20 billion of substances things will be connected in 2020, as it is predicted. Of course, associated with this Internet of the Things is the service. And the smart sensor is not smart if it's only connected and report the digit. It is a smart if it can tell you how efficient that you consume your energy. And also the sensors at your body, it should be smart to tell you are in the good shape or give you a warning that you are have something wrong. So I can foresee, and I also see a lot of ambitions initiated between Europe and China. I am a researcher in ICT technology. I know Europe currently still a few years ahead in the ICT technology research, I would say. I really share the opinion that we really need to act, and it is really a right time, advantage time, that to catch the second wave of this ICT revolution. Thanks.
Thank you, Weimin Gao. Linda, do you want to respond to what Luigi said or the other comments that have come your way?
Well, let me just say we have had many calls for action and less talk here. So I would like to respond to that in general because, I mean, Luigi and I know one another. We don't always agree, but that's the beauty of the debate we're in, isn't it? So just to say that actually we have already responded, I think, the European Commission, that is, on the call for action. On the 6th of March, we presented a new package for the digital single market. This is the ambition to realize the ideas already put down several decades ago, as some of you know already, when there was first a white paper and then a proposal for a single or internal market in the European Union. At that time, it was the European Community. And in digital, we actually don't have an internal or single market. We have 28 markets, and we want to move from the 28 markets to one. So it's a hugely ambitious goal we have. And in order to make this reality, there are three pillars in the proposal with 16 actions. And these actions that are of different nature, they are front-loaded, so everything will be on the table either this year or next year. And that is in order for everything to be ready before this present, the Juncker Commission, finishes its mandate. So it's hugely ambitious. We know that this is only the beginning. We know it will not be easy, but I think sometimes you have to have both a short-term, medium-term perspective, but also a long-term perspective. After all, China is very good at that, to have a long-term perspective. And I think we can learn from China also on that score. But that's what we have. This is what we want to create, because this sector is moving so fast, so we must create the right conditions for the sector and the industry to thrive so that it's not hampered by rules and regulations but helped. So that is the ambition, create the level playing field to foster competition, to foster innovation, to foster the scaling of startups, to tap the huge potential of big data. I mean, some people call it the new resource, and I think that that's a good way of characterizing it. There is so much in there, so we really need to get moving, and we hope that the member states will follow us and that they will quickly put their teeth into the proposals once they come on the table. And the first ones are coming pretty soon. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's absolutely. I don't want this to turn into a debate between the two of you, but I'll give you the floor later once we start the question and answer session. But just to say that I was at the EU-China Business Summit yesterday moderating a couple of sessions, and what was said very clearly by the business leaders in the ICT sector was that they are moving really fast ahead, and regulatory environment policymakers are playing catch up, and I think that is the normal way of life. I mean, you guys in the business sector are the ones that are setting the pace, and then, you know, the people come back, they lag behind slightly. But let's open that debate. But before I do that, Professor Shu, you've been listening patiently to what has been said, and I'd like you to give a few comments about what you've heard, and then I'll open the floor. So please do prepare your questions.
Yeah. 这个我想说
I'd like to get some feedback. I think timing actually decides action. So in the future, from 2016 to 2020, no matter to China or to the world economy, how can we contribute to its growth? I think timing means everything. In the last 5 years, we all see rapid economic growth in China, and also the rising of Internet Plus. We can say we've seen them come together. So no matter it's for big data, for information cooperation, we've seen great influences from all these aspects. So we should grasp onto those opportunities. It would be such a shame if we miss this golden opportunity. So after 2015, we try to come up with the next 5 years action plan. So where can we develop? How? So through the cooperation between China and Europe, I think it means greatly to the economic growth around the world. So it's very crucial for our cooperation. For this kind of cooperation, I think it's not just happen in Europe, not just being significant to Europe, not just being significant to China, but to the whole world. At the same time, I think we need to discard all those old ideas, concepts, actions no longer serve us. We have to have breakthroughs. So I believe the next 5 years are very important, very crucial. Let's decide and take action within the next 5 years. Thank you.
Action moving forward from the talk we've done about cooperation, synergies, linkages, etc. I'm happy now to open the floor. We've got about 25 minutes for a Q&A. I see Marjut already. I see Teresa. Anyone else coming in at this point? Okay. Please, Liam, to Marjut here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sara. Marjut Halonen from the European Commission DG Trade. As we know, internet freedom doesn't really exist in China, so there are quite a lot of restrictions on internet freedom. So how we see it here, this seems to be like an obstacle for the developing digital market. And our companies in China have indicated that these restrictions to internet freedom starts already hampering their business operations there. So I would like to ask the Chinese panelists, do you see this contradiction between the internet restrictions and these very ambitious plans to develop the digital market? And if there is, how are you planning to solve them? Thank you. Or how the government is seeing how to solve them? Thank you.
Thank you very much for that question. Yes, Teresa.
Hello, Teresa Fallon, European Institute for Asian Studies. Thank you to the panel. I have a question in regard to Horizon 2020. We know Huawei has over 120 affiliations with universities throughout Europe. And recently there's been a story about Imperial College in London and this scandal about technology being transferred to Iran for nuclear. So how do you expect, or how do you foresee the 28 member states with such close cooperation with Huawei? I'm just curious, is there any sort of overarching kind of security issue that you're worried about? Is it up to each member state? Is there something at the EU level? Thank you.
Well, I think we'll take it more generally. Huawei is not present here, so I will not take that question specifically on one company, but I will put the question to the panelists here. Is there anyone else? Yes, please, please. Just a second, please, sir. There you go.
Okay. I'm Leticia Chen. I'm from Spain. I cooperating between 10 years about the international science park in the headquarters in the south of Spain in Malaga. So the ICT TIC in Spanish ICT communication. This is about the research center. EU of China, EU China Research Center of Digital and of Internet is a very good idea. I just ask you, in the future, you want to propose, so in the future, is where will be this center, research center? Is it will be Brussels or there will be any different countries, a branch to put the connectivity with another country also have an opportunity, just like Spain?
Thank you very much. Luigi, would you like to kick off?
Sorry, I need just to clarify something which is very important. First of all, I think the Commission, European Commission does an excellent work and is very committed, just be very clear, on the relation in general, not only with China, but also the rest of the world. What I was saying regarding 5G, just to clarify my view, is that is not only important. I don't see that this is for China. Is important. It's also important for Europe to have an agreement with China, because I think that if you don't have an agreement with China, we lose something. If the European Commission made two good agreements with South Korea and Japan, but the only agreement who will make the difference is with China, because China is the only important country who can make the difference, because China has an industry, China. So therefore, I think that we see a loser both if we are not able to sign an agreement, and I hope that this will be done soon, because it's important to look at our future, and it's important to work together, Europe and China. Then I agree, there are problems, and I think, I hope, the Chinese government also will look at this problem, because it's also in their interest to solve this problem. Why Europe has opened research and development to foreigners? Because it's something positive. We did, because it's something which helped our network of our industry to work with third party. So we did because we feel in Europe this is something extremely positive, and I think that should be considered at the same time in China, and we feel that such kind of openness should be the same way as is in Europe. But let's continue to work and let's sign an agreement with 5G. It's not only in the interest of China, I think, is also in the interest of Europe. Now, regarding the center, I don't know, because we will propose this to the Chinese government, we will discuss, but this is a very interesting question, because I think that China Research Internet Center could be really an important tool, but there is not yet discussion where this could be done.
It's a vision at the moment. It's going to be turned into a plan very soon. So we watch Luigi's space very carefully. Please.
Maybe a response to the lady's question first. I'm a Chinese, but I live in Belgium already for 20 years, so I can observe, in a different angle as a Chinese. I would be honest to say my friends in China, I don't feel any restriction in the internet. Maybe there are some existing things, but that's really outdated, and everybody thinks in that way. So I think, don't think it's...
If I may interrupt, I think Marjut's question was that European companies in China have said in their annual report that they are actually losing business, etc., because they can't access the internet as freely as they would like to. I think that's your question, Marjut. Yes.
Well, even that, that's included to my answers. I think it will change very, very soon. It should not be a concern, to my opinion. That's one point. The second point is myself. I want to bring it up before ending. There are a lot of proposals, initiatives, and big plans. Of course, the big companies and Alibaba, all these you mentioned, and also in Europe, and this One Belt, One Road project and Rung project and so on. Definitely, big ones contribute bigger, that's no doubt. What I want to bring up is I want to urge all these proposals or plans or policy to pay more attention to the SME. The cooperation between China and Europe for SME. For our observation, because we have been helping also Chinese and European companies, SMEs, and to do to connect and so on. To my observation, the threshold is high for them currently. A lot of contacts, communication, but the result is very limited. So I would like urging that the policymakers or think tank to really put some attention to that and to give some favorite policies on that. That's my point.
Thank you. John Winson.
So let me also try to, take that question from business angle, right? So you talked about, the internet freedom. And China has another huge aspiration, which is becoming an innovation leader globally by 2050, right? And innovation comes from, the free, information flow, discussion and diversity and so on, right? So, but I believe, right? So if you know this becomes a bottleneck, right, in terms of achieving that aspiration, then there will be gradual bottom-up feedback, and then you know government will you know gradually you know make changes, right? So therefore, in some sense, it's a bit unfair to apply Western standard and try to evaluate you know where China stands as of today. So I believe it's going to be a more gradual approach. And this information flow, you know, the freedom, you know, that's only one aspect of the internet, right? Internet has a lot of other bigger potential, especially when applied to business sectors and industry sectors. For example, right, it can solve a lot of problems in many industries. For example, in automotive sector, the market is slowing down. Therefore, you know, companies can use internet to improve their forecasting accuracy, reduce inventory costs, you know, cut the other operating costs, right? In real estate sector, industry is again slowing down. You know, therefore, you know, companies can reduce internet to match and accelerate the transaction between buyer and seller and reduce this, you know, transaction cost. In healthcare sector, you know, huge resource imbalance. Therefore, you know, internet can solve this, you know, the online appointment issues and also match the other doctors in large cities and patients in rural areas and so on. Right. So these are the opportunities that I suggest a lot of, you know, European companies should, you know, pay attention to, right? So because there are, you know, lots of innovation, internet-related innovation opportunities in China. And then once you figure this out in China, then this model can work in many other emerging countries. Therefore, innovation in China can also change the global innovation landscape.
Right. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. I just wanted to ask you also, because we've talked about the One Belt, One Road, and it's true that they're also talking about an information Silk Road. Would you be able to just give us a glimpse of what that means?
Yeah. So connectivity, you know, will be very helpful in terms of increasing the trade, right? But then not just, you know, physical, you know, trade, but also information trade, because a lot of, you know, creative ideas that can be, you know, incubated in other parts of the world can be commercialized in China. You know, Mr. Gao mentioned some of the ICT technology is advanced in, you know, Europe or some other countries. But then what matters is commercialization, right? Because commercializing and delivering a new product and services are the other real innovation, and that solves the problem. And then in that sense, you know, China is a perfect country to do that, right? So in that sense, if, you know, there will be more information flow, you know, from this, you know, new, you know, information Silk Road, and then they can be commercialized in China, leveraging massive, you know, manufacturing ecosystem, for example, in Pearl River Delta or in Shenzhen area, and also the scale of the economy, right? So in China, you know, there is almost no niche market. You know, this small beauty, you know, specialist market is also huge in China. Therefore, you can easily commercialize. You flow your ideas into China, easily commercialize, innovate, and then take it to somewhere else. So this is, you know, very interesting, you know, innovation opportunity in China.
What do you think, Larry? Is this something what Jungwin has said about the innovation Silk Road, the information Silk Road?
Well, I mean, people talk about innovation policy, but, you know, to put those two words together, you're really creating something of an oxymoron. It strikes me. I mean, I think what we do need is sort of innovation in terms of collaborative structures between the two, you know, trading blocks. I mean, it's very interesting. For example, last week, Robert Madeline, who's the DG of DG Connect, I think after the summer break, become innovation advisor to President Juncker. I think that's quite an interesting and far forward-looking appointment. But in terms of innovation collaboration, we talked about technology, particularly pre-competitive technology. We've talked about standards. But probably we don't talk enough about sort of collaboration and dialogue on business models. And sort of early regulation doesn't help in business models, which is where America does rather well. It sort of waits to see how things develop rather than sort of looking at regulation a little too early. I think probably also, you know, looking at innovation in terms of collaborative dialogue on policy, because policy isn't one size fits all, but the same issues apply, whether it's antitrust, whether it's intellectual property protection, whether it's privacy issues versus censorship versus freedom of expression, or whether it's security issues, which are all the same elements of a different continuum, and the continuum might perhaps vary according to the situation the market is in. I think those sorts of dialogues will be important.
I would just like to say that on signature of on agreement that was mentioned by Luigi, I wouldn't be so pessimistic. First of all, I think that Europe understands that there is a lot of interest in all this for us as well. And that's why we engage so intensively with China and with other partners. So let me just put that straight now. And secondly, I would also like to say, as a person who has been most of her professional lives done negotiations, we all know that if you negotiate an agreement, it first of all takes a certain amount of time, and secondly, there is a point of balance that you eventually reach when both parties can live with what is in the agreement. Perhaps they're not widely happy about it, but as long as no party is unhappy, you can have a deal. And therefore, you can never set artificial timelines for important agreements in particular, but you have to let this process work itself through before you can sign. So, thank you.
Thank you. Just wanted to know if there was anyone else would have a question for... okay, for Professor Schifferlin, please. Yeah, she's had her question.
Thank you.
I'd like to give my comment, follow up to what Linda just shared. Yes, Juncker plan, and once we can combine Juncker plan and One Belt, One Road, I think we can see that in 2020, and we can see the free trade zone to come to effective in 2020. I think it's important, it's a vision. And let's ask ourselves, if this year and next year, if we can really combine Juncker plan and One Belt, One Road, so can we actually set up an action plan to different phases that we can foresee free trade zone area in 2020? I think it's doable if we calculate carefully. Today we're here to talk about cooperation. I think it's very important. As I said, next 5 years is a crucial time. We will focus on our innovation on the Internet Plus, and hopefully we can see the related accounts for GDP from the R&D of the Internet Plus accounts for GDP from 50% to 30%. So I think in the next 5 years, we can see the market will be enlarged. It will create not only commercial model in China and will change our ways of life, and will create new ways of social development. Let's say we're talking about big data, social welfare, big data, healthcare. I think in the next 2 years, some of them will probably be realized. We'll probably have big data province. We'll probably have big data city or big data healthcare within the city. So I think all this Internet Plus, all this technology will change the governing methods of local governments. Thirdly, I think once we combine all those technologies, I think through Friends of Europe, through all those think tanks in Europe, I think we can really work on the free trade area come to effectiveness in 2020. So for all the relevant party, we can try to appeal to our governments. So I think we all play an important part in making the free trade zone come to effective. For my institute, CIRD, I don't mind to come here more often if you need me, and to help realize this project in the future. I think it will be significant to China, Europe, and to the whole world. It's very important when we should all work on it. In terms of the collaboration for innovation, I think we can foresee Chinese and European government will come up with some new ideas in the future. When we talk about negative list management from the higher level in the Chinese central government to local government, we've been working on it. Thank you.
One quick follow-up question for you on the 13th Five-Year Plan. The 12th five-year plan was very much about sustainable development, renewable energies. That was the focus. Now, is it going to be the internet, digital innovation? Are these going to be services? Are these going to be the key sectors? Because we're all looking forward to its publication. I think we're all gearing up to see what different aspects we should be looking at further.
好，谢谢。中国政。
Thank you. Yes, we are currently working more on the 13 five-year plan. I'm also on the reviewing panel. This autumn, we're going to have a meeting that we will meet regarding this 13 five-year plan. And next spring, we'll come up with new strategies and new final plans for the 13-year five-year plan. As you all mentioned, we would like to switch from the made in China to the future that we can see made with Chinese innovation. So we can see Chinese Council already hand a proposal to our National Assembly Congress. So in the future, we can see more cooperation, a closer cooperation between China and EU. I believe it will happen. And that's what I try to promote during my visit here. And hopefully we can increase our cooperation in terms of innovation. The most important thing for the 13th five-year plan is that it actually oversees the development of Chinese economic growth. So before it was an industrial-led economy, we would like to see it transform into a service industry-led economy. So one day when the 13 five-year plan come to an end, I'm sure we can see China has gone through huge transformation and the whole economy will be led by service sector. And we can see the growth by 55% to 58%. As you all mentioned, now we need to take action. We have so many ideas. We have encountered so many challenges and obstacles. But we have this vision. If we have the vision, I'm sure we can conquer all the difficulties and it won't hinder our progress. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Professor Xu. And thank you also to all the panelists, to Larry, Linda, yourself, Professor Zhengming, Women Gao and Luigi. I think we've had I'm not going to try and wrap up because we're really at the cusp of a dialogue. And I think that's what's so interesting about having this meeting right after the summit yesterday is that there are new ideas that have been set forward. And we're sort of looking and exploring different sides of it. What really needs to be done now to get the practical cooperation off the ground. So, and as usual, Professor Xu, I have to say thank you to you because you really bring your insider's view of what's happening in the academic economic world and because, of course, your close links with what's happening on the wider stage in China as well. So thank you very much for setting out an agenda for the future. This is the first session. As I said, we have now a tea break, and then there'll be a conversation on smart cities, which has been discussed here as well. Big data, big cities, smart cities. I think that's going to be a very interesting new area of further linkages as well. And then after lunch, we'll talk more of the Silk Road connectivity platform that has just been launched. If you have questions, I suggest, as the gentleman put up his hand here, to keep them for later. It is about half an hour or so. The conversation continues. Please join me in saying thank you to our panelists.